Welcome to Crossroads, the infrastructure podcast. This is your host, Andrew Vitelli, the news editor of Energy in the Americas for InfraLogic. Thank you for tuning in. For those in the renewables and energy industry, our guest today truly needs no introduction. He is the CEO and founder of Marathon Capital, an independent advisory firm focused on clean energy, Ted Brandt. Ted, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you very much for having me as your guest, Andrew.
Well, so I'm sure all my listeners who work in the renewables space know Marathon very well. But for those outside the energy sector who might be listening, can you talk a little bit about your firm?
Sure. We were originally founded in 1999. We are headquartered in Chicago with offices around the world. The preponderance of our business is aimed at North America, you know, largely the United States, but we do have operations in Canada, Western Europe, as well as Asia. We, you know, think of ourselves as the largest independent investment bank in the world aimed at the clean economy. And you will see us involved in asset-related M&A, corporate-related M&A, as well as various forms of capital raising, project financing, debt raising, or in the United States, tax-oriented transactions.
Well, great. Thank you, Ted. And you mentioned that you founded Marathon in 1999. Can you talk a little bit about your background in the sector and what led you to launch a new firm?
I can only say, it was a bit of luck and circumstance. I, at the time, was out of a job, my employer's choice, and was looking to get involved in the late 1990s, moving into the new millennium. The whole story was the retirement of coal plants and the replacement of coal plants with natural gas plants. You know, I thought that was intriguing, but when we got into that market even a little bit, what we realized is we were very late and very non-relevant. But as we looked closer, what we did find was a number of small green shoots around renewables and ultimately decided to make that a niche. I'd never been a banker before. I had been very active in structured financing. I'd never really been involved in energy other than around energy efficiency. But I did know credit, tax, and accounting enough that I was able to recognize that there was a real void in the knowledge across the market. It was kind of below the radar screen of the bulge bracket Wall Street. And I would just say that, we did 40 deals in our first number of years, before Wall Street really woke up to the importance of renewables.
Well, that's interesting, Ted. I actually never knew that you founded Marathon, not coming from an energy background. That's very interesting. And you've had remarkable success in the 2.5 decades since. You've really accomplished everything you can in the renewable space, except for one thing, which was being a guest on the Crossroads podcast. And I'm glad you have the chance to check that off your list today.
Well, it's true. It was on my bucket list, Andrew.
So, Ted, you, as you mentioned, you do a lot of work in the renewables M&A space, and it's been a 2 to 3 year period of a lot of ups and downs, a lot of turmoil. Looking at it today, what is the overall state of the renewables market, especially with a focus on M&A activity?
To answer that question, probably the best answer is to take a little bit of a historical view that forever, when you thought about electrical generation was largely thought about, the preponderance of it was baseload. And there was effectively a dance going on between nuclear, natural gas generation, and coal. And then really the last 10 years has really been the story about intermittent renewables. I know geothermal's baseload, but it's a very, very small percentage. But onshore wind, offshore wind, and various forms of solar that are all intermittent, forms of electricity. And, I do think that, the last couple of years, you'd have to think about as having been difficult because interest rates and the cost of capital has increased literally double from where it was in 2021 to 2023. And capital cost also went up, the cost to actually build these projects, including the EPC and all the various different panels and or turbines, have gone up 25-30% from where they were. And so there's been a lot of turmoil across the industry in terms of levelized cost of energy effectively doubling because of those two factors. But I would say that in 2024, we've seen a much more constructive market. We're seeing an awful lot of deals being done. We're seeing a lot of capital in the market. We're seeing a lot of inventory in the market. And while I wouldn't call it anything close to a bull market a la the way it was in 2020 or 2021, it's 50-60% better than what it was in late 22 and 23. The market seems to have normalized. People seem to understand where the costs are, and lots of scale is being financed.
So what would you say the major constraints or headwinds are right now that are still facing the renewables industry?
I actually would just answer your question with one additional thing and start talk about what are the tailwinds. Demand for electricity as projected out 5 years ago, or 5 years from now, and I'm largely thinking about the U.S., is unprecedented. That the International Energy Agency in December of 23 reforecasted their next five-year projections and projected a 5.5% compounded growth rate for the next 5 years. In my entire 25 years in business, what I always thought of is that demand in electricity growth grew about 50% of GDP real growth. And now all of a sudden, that's going to be two or three times GDP growth. So it's unprecedented. We've never, certainly in my business career, we've never really seen anything like it. So the good news is demand is going to be incredible. But, I would say the headwinds are really, continued cost pressures. Obviously, a lot of the solar business, operates on imported product in from some countries where, we have tariffs, et cetera, largely, China and China related. And, there's a lot of complexity across the market. And obviously, the events of, we have an election year in the United States, and the events from the debate of last week have an awful lot of people questioning whether or not the key Biden policy, the IRA, is going to remain in place, or if not, will there be changes? And so, I would say while short run and medium run things are very, very positive, there's clearly dark clouds on the horizon that we'll find out if they turn out to be good news or bad news.
And you mentioned the increase in energy demand that's projected. Is that due to AI and the need to store increasing amounts of data?
It clearly is, but you had also mentioned various forms of Bitcoin mining and EV movement over the grid. There's a bunch of different factors, the largest of which is AI and data centers. But the projections are incredible. And, what I would say that, going back to my baseload versus intermittent, is that one of the things that's interesting is that it's a lot of what we're hearing from, these very, very data heavy technology companies is a need for baseload electricity. And, you're hearing, that they're contracting with old nuclear plants and they're talking about new nuclear small modular reactors. So the amount of, I'd say the game of musical chairs that the technology players are playing is, we need to solidify the electric supply, which is the single largest input cost that they have in, generating data centers for AI.
Well, it's interesting because for years there's been the talk of electrification, EVs, et cetera, more of the economy becoming electrified. But But it seems like really in the past 6 months, since the beginning of this year, we've just seen more and more discussion about the increasing demands specifically related to AI, data centers, storing data, things like that.
Yeah, there were futurists that were talking about it certainly this time last year. But you're right, in terms of mainstream and in terms of, I think, public policy coming to grips with how big, I mean, a 5.5% compounded 5-year rate of return is about a 35% total increase. And in, you know, we're the largest system in the world in the United States. So you're talking about 350 gigawatts, 400, gigawatts of new generation that will be installed over the next 5 years just to keep up with demand, if those projections are correct. As I said, it's going to be a game of musical chairs where, it's not clear all demand is going to be satisfied.
And what are the biggest challenges to meeting that demand growth that's needed?
I think you have to take it sort of technology by technology. It certainly looks in the developed world that coal is on its way out almost completely. You know, if it's, I think when I got into this business in the 1990s, coal was 55% of the generation across the country. You know, this year that will be well less than 20%. And, I think you'll continue to see coal moving away, although CCUS, may affect some older plants. You know, natural gas is going to be limited by, where you can get gas. There's some parts of the country where you just can't get pipelines permitted under, either party. And so, you'll have to find other alternatives. And a lot of people are looking at the possibility of these small modular reactors and nuclear as a way of effectively bringing clean, low carbon baseload. But that's hugely dependent upon not just costs coming down from $8 to $10 million a megawatt versus less than $1.5 million for natural gas fueled, but it's also hugely dependent on nuclear regulation effectively becoming standardized so that certain components are approved in a factory and can be rolled out without, each different small reactor having to, have its own army of regulators. It's very, very speculative as to whether that's going to happen. But I would say against that backdrop of the grid growing by 35-40%, I should say the generation on the grid growing by 35-40%, there's huge projections that trillions of dollars are going to have to be spent on the transmission and distribution points. You're going to see, we think, more and more inside the fence deals as opposed to, people buying off of the centralized grid. Distributed generation probably will continue to have traction. And so, we really believe that we're in unprecedented times.
And obviously, we've seen significant growth in traditional technologies like wind and solar, particularly solar in recent years. And now batteries have also become mainstream. What other technologies, and you mentioned a couple in your last answer, but what other technologies do you think are really interesting right now for investors, particularly with the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, now pretty much being fully in effect?
I would say if you sort of look backwards over the last 6 to 18 months since the, almost 24 months since the IRA was passed in August of 2022, there's been an awful lot of traction around hydrogen. There's been a lot of traction around CCUS. The SAF markets are trying very hard to scale, sustainable aircraft fuel. The renewable natural gas markets have been trying to go. But in terms of, baseload or intermittent generation, you're watching a bit of a resurgence in the geothermal market. We're seeing continued growth in solar, utility scale solar, largely coupled with storage. I should say more and more frequently coupled with storage. Onshore wind works, and in most of the countries of the world, offshore wind works. We'll see, whether the United States is going to really scale that market. because that, you know, that market clearly was hit very, very hard by the levelized cost of energy going up like crazy. But, you know, I think most people, as they look out at the future, and especially as they say this happens around baseload, is they're looking at renewables plus storage as supplemented by baseload power coming from, you know, either natural gas. And there's been a huge amount of M&A around natural gas, largely around existing, you know, 10-year-old or less gas plants. We haven't yet seen the price in the M&A market exceed the cost to build new. So we haven't, you know, seen a lot of new plants being installed. But most people believe that it's either, you know, that the additional 35 gigawatts is going to come from the baseload component, at least will be coming from natural gas or small nuclear reactors. There was an article in the Journal this past couple of days where they were talking about a bunch of 20, 25-year-old reactors that had been operating for years as merchant plants. And all of a sudden, I think Amazon has been signing up, and effectively Amazon services have been buying out the power for the next 10 years. And, you know, there's clearly going to be some pressure as that happens. Then, you know, what does that leave the rest of the population for demand? And will that all be dirty energy? And, you know, there's just massive amounts of public policy arguments that we still have in front of us. But, you know, I would say it's underpinned by this unprecedented demand we've never seen before.
We mentioned public policy, and I'll circle back to a comment you made before, speaking about the presidential race, and we're recording this on July 2nd, so just a few days after that debate. Now, I'm not going to do any political predictions or prognostications. Obviously, there's now in the renewable sector probably growing concern that there could be a Republican administration next year. How big a deal would the renewable energy industry see a change in administration? Would that be something that really shakes up the expected growth of the industry?
I mean, Andrew, that is the multi-billion dollar question that everybody across our industry is asking. You know, there's certainly a scenario where a Trump administration might say, as a way of paying for what the Congressional Budget Office claims will be $4 trillion cost of an extension of the 2017 tax cuts beyond 2025, when they're now supposed to expire, that for Trump to get that done, he's going to need to have some pay-fors in the IRA, which initially was guesstimated at $360 billion in costs and has been estimated variously up to $2 trillion. Might be a big down payment on that. You know, I've heard, you know, some of the prospective vice presidents, notably the governor of North Dakota, say that's, you know, that's just completely speculative. It's not true. You know, he's pretty on, you know, CCUS and a whole bunch of components of the IRA that he wouldn't want to see leave. So I don't think anybody knows at this point, other than, you know, it's probably fair to say that short of a new Democratic, you know, backed deal, the IRA was 100% partisan with, you know, no Republican votes, that some changes to the IRA are certainly possible. And, you know, I don't think anybody really knows at this point how it all comes down.
Now, is that affecting activity, including in the M&A market today in 2024, because of that uncertainty? Or is this more of a concern looking forward?
Well, it's clearly a concern looking forward. I think up to last week, the industry sort of feeling was, you know, wild optimism, lots and lots of capital that had been raised around the sector, no real doubts about the public policy. I think Thursday's events clearly changed that. We heard some anecdotal evidence over the weekend with one would-be client that was going to do a capital raise that just said, you know, I'm going to sell. So I think at the margins, you're going to see people that will be, you know, trying to think about, you know, the long-term implications. I would say in the short term, what I think you're going to see is huge efforts towards safe harboring projects, so that projects that are coming out of 2024 are already grandfathered in for the ITC, for the PTC, for the various Section 45 credits. And, you know, that's what I would imagine that, you know, to have happen. You know, it would be great if the would-be Republican administration would clarify their positions, and we'll see, you know, whether that happens.
Well, that's interesting to hear, Ted. From my conversations, it seemed like there's been concern that a change in administration could make a difference around the margins, but it's interesting to hear that now that concern seems to be growing, that there could be something like legislative changes to the IRA. Well, Ted, I really appreciate you you joining me here today. That's all the time we have, but I think this has been a great conversation.
Thank you very much for having me. And, you know, I would just say my opinions, you know, while I do sit as the CEO of Marathon, are mine, not Marathon's. So, you know, all I can say is that I am long-term bullish and, you know, short-term a little bit nervous.
Understood, Knight. I think you speak not only for yourself, but many in the sector when you say that.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you, listeners, for tuning into Crossroads. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast player, and please give us a 5-star rating so others can find our podcast. Until next time, this has been Crossroads.